You're listening to the Sikoa Media App.
Alrighty, here we go. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Talk 365 podcast. It's been a minute. Joe Sikoa here with you as we bring you yet another episode. And of course, this is basically going to be baseball since we're in the off season, and there's a lot of things going on. And also, we didn't really get to speak when the World Series happened. So we're basically going to catch up with ourselves in a sense. And of course, when we talk baseball, I always bring in my buddy Andrew Hartz. Andrew, as always, my friend, welcome back.
It's good to be on. Good to be back talking baseball, even though it's, got a little colder out. It finally feels like late fall instead of, middle spring. But it's nice to be talking baseball, recap everything. And there's a bunch to talk about, that for sure. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Between some awards that were given out, of course, congratulations to the Atlanta Braves for winning the World Series, beating out the Astros, capturing their first World Series title since 95. Talk about that. 88-win team go on to win the World Series. They went on a hot streak from middle to late July after beating the Mets and basically took off from there, made some moves that they needed to do, and they were able to capture the World Series title there. And, of course, they have a big player in question if they can bring him back or whatnot. Of course, the New York Mets in their debacle, but they finally do find a general manager in what seemed to be an endless search where person after person had turned them down. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Of course, a lot of question marks with the New York Yankees. Are they big game hunting? Are they not? And then, of course, the potential of a labor lockout, which we kind of been alluding to all season long, knowing that the CBA was going to be up at the end of this year. And we knew that Major League Baseball and the Players Association have certainly not been seeing eye to eye throughout the last few seasons. And I think it's starting to come to its head at this point, but it does sure sound like a lockout is possible for Major League Baseball. So a lot of things to dive into, and let's really start with that, because I feel like if there is a lockout, then not much can really happen. Now, there have been some signings, some free agent signings, one of them being a stunner of a deal that affects the New York Mets. So we'll quickly go through the signings and then kind of tie it into the work stoppage potential that there is, and then kind of set up the rest of the offseason and what's been going on. But Noah Syndergaard is no longer a member of the New York Mets. He rejected a qualifying offer, and mind you, folks, the qualifying offers that are extended out to Major League ball players is $18.4 million, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Andrew.
No, you got it.
So to leave $18.4 million on the table for just a one-year deal, especially for players who, one, either didn't have a good year, you might want to bet on yourself to have a good productive year while still getting $18.4 million, or two, maybe, I don't know, if you haven't pitched in 2 years, that maybe you might want to take a qualifying offer and bet on yourself for a bigger contract next year. But nonetheless, Noah Syndergaard rejected an $18.4 million qualifying offer and took a $21 million one-year contract from the Angels, which many in the industry thought the Angels might have been a little bit desperate to give that contract out to Noah Syndergaard. But they're banking on this guy to have a bounce-back season, and we know what his potential could be when healthy. So that was one of the signings. Then we saw Andrew Heaney, who was acquired by the Yankees at the trading deadline and was just absolutely abysmal. He got $8 million from the Dodgers. Eduardo Rodriguez signed with the Detroit Tigers. So we've had some signings, not the big signings that we've anticipated, because there are some big-name free agents out there, the Carlos Correas and the Freddie Freemans, but we'll get to that when we get to the offseason stuff. But again, it ties into maybe some of these guys who are banking on these bounce-back years might sit here and say, let me get this signed up quickly because there might be a work stoppage. And Andrew, as we know, there has been a lot of labor issues between these two parties. So just give me your overall thoughts and what you're thinking and what you're hearing around Major League Baseball when it comes to a work stoppage.
So the work stoppage is obviously first and foremost. I think the fact that when you look at the past few off seasons, it's all been coming down to this. And honestly, this goes back, I want to say, even to 2016. You know, you heard rumblings. You saw the whole thing with Blake Snell. I believe that was last off season, and then you saw it kind of get intensified with the whole COVID situation in terms of, you know, the schedule starting or whatnot. There's bad blood, and I think that anyone who doesn't recognize that is being foolish. Now, with that said, though, I think if you're able to, and I do think there will be a work stoppage. Now, whether that means a work stoppage in terms of offices and, you know, front offices being closed and, you know, not seeing different transactions go through, I think that's what you'll absolutely see. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, how far down the line does it affect getting to spring training and does it affect to get into opening day? And honestly, from everything that we've heard and everything that we've seen, it's going to be ugly and it's not going to be an easy process. And this is where Rob Manfred is going to have to figure out, you know, what do I concede here? You know, do we give them the DH? Do we add a playoff team? Do we take out the playoff team? There's a lot that's going to have to go on here. And the fact that we're waiting until the last minute, this is procrastination at its finest. And I think the players union wants a fight. And quite frankly, it seems like the owners are going to be extremely stubborn about what they're willing to give up. So it's a bad combustible element that's going to happen at some point. And at the end of the day, who's going to suffer? It's going to be the fans.
Yeah.
Like we always do. We're going to be the ones that's going to be left without having baseball when, you know, we're ready for it come, you know, the dog days of winter when it's cold and you're looking forward to April and everything. So it's going to get ugly. It is.
Meanwhile, you know, when you mentioned that right there where owners are looking to give up, but yet they're throwing out ridiculous contracts, you know, Noah Syndergaard, $21 million for 1 year. Justin Verlander, $25 million for 1 year. Okay, so it really is going to be interesting. So here's basically where things stand, because Rob Manfred did discuss the possibility of a lockout. And I'm citing this information from MLBTradeRumors.com. And basically, what it's saying here is if a new deal isn't agreed upon when the current one expires, which would be 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on December 1st, the general expectation within the industry is that owners will lock the players out, resulting in a ban on transactions until another agreement is reached. So if indeed the CBA expires in essentially 2 weeks' time, or less than 2 weeks' time at this point, players will be locked out, and basically no transactions will be allowed to be done, such as trades or free agent signings. Rob Manfred addressed the state of the labor situation when speaking with reporters, and this was a couple of days ago, because this was actually yesterday. This was posted from yesterday on MLB Trade Rumors. And they said the commissioner stopped short of calling a lockout inevitable, but he certainly seemed to suggest that that course of action was on the table. Manfred drew a distinction between the impact a winter transactions freeze would have on the sport versus that of a work stoppage that lingers into next season. These are quotes from Rob Manfred. I can't believe there's a single fan in the world who doesn't understand that an off-season lockout that moves the process forward is different than a labor dispute that costs games. As to whether the side still hoped of hammering out a new CBA deal before December 1st, Manfred said that the league was, quote, committed to continuing to offer proposals and suggestions in an effort to get an agreement done before that date, but acknowledged that time is becoming an issue. Manfred implied that the league wouldn't want to run the risk of negotiating without an agreement at this time around, pointing to the 94 strike and trends in other professional sport leagues as justification. So, it really does sound like baseball is preparing for this. Because with less than 2 weeks to go before this CBA is expiring, it doesn't seem like much progress has been made. And so now, well, I was going to say before, and now it suggests where you've had pretty much two bad years from a public relations standpoint in regards to the COVID handling, to the Astros scandal, to the major league, to the minor league system, and how unfair it has been for minor league teams, and the fact that they had to cut corners and basically liquidate many teams. So it really hasn't been a very good couple of years for baseball from the public relations standpoint. And I don't care what anybody says, attendance, viewership is down. What is this? What is this? I can't even, like, this is a question that should be super easy to answer, Andrew, is a labor issue like this and a possible lockout will, I believe, devastate this sport.
Absolutely. And but again, for everything that you just listed there, there should be no surprise what this is coming down to, and that this is going to be coming down to a shutdown. And this labor dispute, like I said, it's going to get ugly. I think the fact that as of right now, you don't even know where things stand. This has been coming for a while, and yet we still don't know where things stand. I mean, look, I have people that work in baseball, and they're not just, you know, worried about not working and having no job once things get shut down, because they believe that it's inevitable, and especially following the shortened season last year. And then again, all the PR nightmares that go along with it. You're right. I mean, what's to keep fans happy at this point in time? I mean, this commissioner has done so much in terms of not appeasing to the fan, giving the fan what they want. The fans wanted some sort of legit punishment on the Astros. They didn't get it. The fans wanted, not to have the 7-inning doubleheader, stuff like that. They still have that. And granted, that still hasn't been taken off the table, even though there is word that it will be taken off the table next year. But again, we don't even know if there's going to be it next year. Baseball has fumbled the bag severely when it comes to this player stuff. And unfortunately, I don't know what the end game is going to be here. Because at the end of the day, when you think about it, Rob Manfred works for the owners. And the owners are pissed off. And they're pissed off about not making money and this and that and players getting too much or having too much power. They don't want to wind up like the NBA where players essentially run the whole show. But at the end of the day, the NBA is one of the most. I know the NFL is king and will always be king for the time being at least. But the NBA has soared beyond baseball's popularity to a point now where it is a global sport, basketball. Baseball still isn't completely global. I mean, granted, yes, there's leagues in Japan, there's leagues, down in Panama and Mexico, stuff like that, but it's not as big as the NBA. And unfortunately, Rob Manfred has done a terrible job with expanding and trying to get bigger eyeballs on the sport to the point where, we've talked about this in the past, where you think about who the big players are, Mike Trout and he's probably one of the best players in baseball.
Even Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani. People, I'm telling you, they could walk around New York City and no one would know who they are. So baseball has a much larger issue on their hands, and it all falls under Rob Manfred. And so the fact that now we're at the point where there could be a legitimate shutdown of the sport, like you said, I don't know if fans are going to – I mean, I'm sure fans will come back. They always come back. But the sport is hurting as is in popularity. You're telling me a shutdown is going to help it? Absolutely not. So it's a problem. And I would hope that baseball has had some sort of, you know, contingency plan for a shutdown, considering that everyone could see this coming a mile away.
Well, here's the other question I have to ask you on this point before we move on, because we do got a lot to get through. Do you think, because you mentioned the owners are pissed, rightfully so, Rob Manfred has really not cemented a very good legacy as commissioner of baseball. Is this possibly make or break time for Rob Manfred when it comes to these negotiations, in the fact that maybe, just maybe, if the owners are that unhappy, there might need to be a change of the guard as commissioner?
I'd be shocked, honestly, just because, I mean, that's the one thing we haven't heard. We haven't heard that the owners are mad at Manfred. You hear the owners are mad at the players and the players' union, but until you start hearing rumblings of, you know, and honestly, in a sense, we could see that side shift with these whole with the negotiations here, where if Manfred does concede and give the players a lot more than, you know, the owners want, yeah, it could absolutely flip like that. And, you know, I would love to see it. I think a lot of people would love to see it. But again, he worked for the owners, and that's why, until, you know, something crazy happens, I would be shocked. And as long as baseball is still making money, like, at the end of the day, that's all they care about. Let's be real. If they're making money and he's making the league money, then why would anyone ever, you know, say, you know, we need someone new? So I don't think it'll happen, but I think that if there is something big that changes and you start hearing rumblings, it could. It very well could.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if Rob Manfred is the commissioner of baseball after all this. And like I said, we're going to continue to monitor the situation in regards to the potential lockout for baseball. And you know what? I'm just going to wrap up this topic with the fact that, unfortunately, Andrew, is no matter what happens, fans are still going to welcome baseball back, even if there is a lockout, because, you know, we went through nearly a year without any sports during the height of the pandemic, that people were craving for some sort of sports, that they were putting Korean Baseball League on TV. So it probably wouldn't surprise me. And then you're going to get the hypocritical fan that'll turn around and say, oh, I'm not going to watch this sport, these greedy bastards and all that stuff. And then yet opening day, they'll be so excited to see baseball back on their screen. So,
but Joe, I will say though, and if you think about it, the last time there was a strike and it was a labor feud and whatnot was '94, and that's when the league shut down, and essentially baseball was never really the same. At least, I mean, granted, I was 4 years old. Pretty sure you were 3 years old, but I don't remember much. But from talking to people that were around it, baseball was never really the same for the following years after, until you saw that home run derby a chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. But the fact that it took a few years for the sport to get back up and running, and then for there to be this historical, you know, feat to be happening based around steroids, essentially, that's what it took to get baseball back. I'm worried, because if you think about it, back in 97, 98, 99, the NBA was not what it was. You didn't have social media. The NFL wasn't what it was. There's just a lot more things going against baseball now than there was in '94. So while I do agree there will always be the fan base that will care about baseball, I'd be very curious how much will just say, you know what, I didn't really watch that much baseball anyway, so I'm just going to, you know, find something else to dive into more, or become a bigger basketball fan, or become a bigger football fan. So that's the only thing that I would be worried about if there was a strike or any sort of shutdown in that sense.
Yeah, like I said, we're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, it is really going to be interesting. And that's why, too, like, I would think, and that's where it tied into a lot of these players signing some deals, possibly just trying to get themselves locked in before this potential lockout. So it's really going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds through this off season. Now, there was a GM meetings We'll get into that real quickly. Some awards have been given out the last couple of days. Congratulations to the Cy Young Award winners, Robbie Ray, Corbin Burns. I think the craziest thing was is that going into the season, if you were a betting person, Robbie Ray was like a plus 10,000 to win the Cy Young Award. So if you put a bet on Robbie Ray, you cashed in big time. So he won it for the American League. Corbin Burns of the Milwaukee Brewers wins it for the National League. And then the MVP award was given out. Bryce Harper bringing home the hardware for the National League. Shohei Ohtani unanimously gets the AL MVP. And I got to say, and I'm not going to spend this much time speaking on these awards because, like I said, we do got a lot to get to. We're catching up in this podcast, but to give Shohei Ohtani unanimous votes when you had guys like Vlad Guerrero Jr. and who was third on that? Who was third on that voting? I think Salvador Perez was third. I mean, Salvador Perez put up unprecedented numbers for a catcher, but Vlad Jr.
Marcus Simeon as well.
Had a terrific year. Had a terrific year. And my whole issue is that Shohei Ohtani batted 257. Yes, he popped 46 home runs, but he batted 257. Vlad Jr., I think, had either a 280 or over 300 average, had home runs, had RBIs. So to give Shohei the unanimous vote, to me, it was just going back to when they gave him Rookie of the Year when Miguel Andujar was robbed of that. Where, oh my God, Shohei Ohtani is this god of baseball because he's a two-way player. But nonetheless, I'm not taking away the MVP from him, but I just didn't think he should have unanimously deserved it. I think Vlad Jr. should have gotten a little bit of first-place love. But that's just my opinion. And then I believe, did they announce managers of the year?
They have not. No, not yet.
Oh, I could have sworn they did because I saw somebody. I guess maybe it was
No, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. It was Kevin Cash and it was
Gabe Kapler.
And Kapler. Yep.
I mean, that should have been a no-brainer in the National League because the Giants were projected. I mean, even for us, I think we put them at like 65, 70 wins. The Giants were projected to maybe get to the 70 win mark, according to Fangraphs. And he comes out and wins the division 107 wins first year as Giants manager. So, God bless. Absolutely deserves it. And then Kevin Cash and the Rays, they do their thing, but they just can't get over that hump. So, nonetheless, congratulations to all the award winners in that. All right. Let's now shift our focus to the local teams here in New York, and that is the Mets and the Yankees. We'll start with the New York Mets because they have a GM, and they have hired former Yankee assistant GM Billy Epler, who was most recently with the Angels for the past several seasons before being let go. And they hire Billy Epler on a four-year deal. And the poor guy, first day in office or getting to his office, he wasn't even able to try and retain Noah Syndergaard. But he comes over, and this was after there were quite a few names being thrown out there, and a lot of people were, again, criticizing the Mets when it came to the search for a general manager. And also the Mets kind of were back and forth with, all right, is it going to be a GM? Is it going to be a president of baseball operations? What the hell is this? Obviously, we know Sandy Alderson was the representative at the GM meetings as the president of baseball operations and basically GM at that point because they had let, Zach Scott go after his DUI. So it's just been a crazy couple of months here for the New York Mets in regards of their front office and what it's supposed to look like. We know that behind the scenes, they continue to add to the analytics department, but they're still trying to figure out who's going to be at the top of the chain. They finally get a Billy Epler guy, and I don't think Epler did a bad job with the Angels. We obviously know he grew to fame even as an assistant for the Yankees, and that's why he was very sought after and when he went to the Angels. But, and you also look, he's the one that landed Shohei Ohtani in Los Angeles. Oh, Jared Porter, I'm sorry. What did I say, Zach Scott? Well, Zach Scott was hired, but then...
that was another mess.
Yeah, that was another mess, exactly. But give me your overall thoughts on this hire for the Mets and why it took so long to figure this out.
Well, first off, as the hire, I think it's a decent pickup. He's obviously someone that's in the game, so at least you're not going with a first-time GM again like you did with Gordy Van Wagenen because you saw how well that worked out. So in that sense, it's good to have someone that's at least, you know, he's respected. He's worked under Brian Cashman, which, you know, not to say the Brian Cashman tree is like the Bill Belichick tree, but you've worked in competent front offices. So in that sense, for an organization that's looking for some sort of stability coming off of last year and that whole debacle, I believe you called it, which it truly was a debacle, it's good. With that said, though, what's puzzling is why it took so long. And why there had to be 30,000 other choices, and, you know, for people to decline and say, you know, I don't want that job. It's funny, I was talking with someone who's still, you know, he's within the game, he knows a lot of people and whatnot, and I asked him, I said, you know, point blank, I said, why does nobody want this job? I said, is it the Steve Cohen thing? Is it in tweeting? Is it the fact that it's the Mets and you got to deal with the Yankees in town? You know, what is it? And he said, honestly, at the end of the day, if people don't want their lives turned upside down. And that, yeah, sure, you know, being a GM for a major league team is a big deal. But if you think about, especially with the Jared Porter situation, where, you know, think about someone like him who was, you know, he got the job. And then, you know, you find out that, you know, someone had been hiding these text messages about you and they were waiting to get you. He said, why would anyone want that at this point in time? If you have a comfy job and you're making enough money and you don't have to deal with the daily stress of being a GM in New York, of all places, too, who would want that? And once I heard that, I said, you know, that's a very good point. Because it's true. It's turned into a high-profile job. You think back to the 80s and 90s, like, it, you know, being a general manager wasn't a big deal. Now, you're helping to put together lineups. You're essentially the point man for a baseball team. So hearing that explanation, I said, all right, that makes sense. But the fact that Steve Cohen and his bundles of money was not able to convince someone higher up to come in, that's what I would be disappointed about. Now, with Billy Epler as a whole, yes, he did some good things with the Angels. You know, getting Shohei is nothing short of, you know, it's something to be proud of considering what he's turned into. Locking up Mike Trout for a record contract, another thing to be proud of. But then you also got to remember, you know, he also hired Mickey Callaway back. He was also he was involved with the team where Skaggs, where he died with the overdose. So he was overlooking that.
Yeah.
He was overlooking the guy in the clubhouse with the sticky stuff, you know, being the ringleader of all that. So he also does have some black marks against him. But again, I think the fact that he has some experience, it'll help. But they have a lot of work to do. And let me tell you what, unless Steve Cohen is willing to truly open up the page or the wallet, he's going to have some good luck ahead of him.
It's interesting that you say that because a quote just came down from Steve Cohen a little while ago. I believe there was a Zoom media conference between
introductory conference,
between Cohen and Sandy Alderson, and I guess they were basically just addressing the state of the team and probably talking about the Billy Epler hiring. But Met owner Steve Cohen said this: "I'm willing for the right deals and right free agents to go get the players we need. We want to be competitive, we want to win our division and be in the playoffs and get deep into the playoffs. I've let Billy and Sandy know it's whatever they need." So, you basically are saying the wallet is open, the checkbook is open, now go find the right deal. So that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, but we also heard that last year too, and what happened? George Springer signed with the Blue Jays. Trevor Bauer, granted, it worked out better, but Trevor Bauer also signed with the Dodgers. So again, is this Steve Cohen trying to wield his big stick and show that, you know, he's the most rich owner in baseball, or is he actually being serious this time? That's the thing. Coming off of last year, that was supposed to be last year, and you think about that free agent class, and yet all he did was, but he brought in Francisco Lindor and signed him a major contract. But is this just him talking? Like his words and actions have to eventually meet up. And I think especially after the way the team played last year, they need something big to happen this year in order to take Steve Cohen serious. That's it.
Yeah. So obviously I think especially after the year that they had where they were in first place and then drastically dropped off, and you bringing in an owner that has more money and is the richest owner in baseball. If you want to compete, I'm sorry. We're not in the Moneyball days anymore. We truly aren't. We've never were in the Moneyball days, okay? You need to go out and spend. And it's almost the same thing where Yankee fans continue to get pissed off where the Steinbrenners all of a sudden are penny-pinching. And we're going to get to that because it's still a situation that's still going on. And there are plenty of Yankee fans that are pissed about it. So if you're going to do something, if you're going to say something like that now, Mr. Cohen, it's really time to, with the old saying, put your money where your mouth is. Let Billy Epler go out and pick up ball players that will be important players for this team. Okay? If you're not going to go out and sign Javi Baez back, then you better be in conversations with Carlos Correa or Corey Seager. If you want to address now because of the fact that you lost Noah Syndergaard and your pitching staff outside of Jacob DeGrom is not that good, then you better be ready to pay Marcus Stroman. And I'm sure Marcus Stroman is looking at the deals that were just given out, especially to a Syndergaard who hasn't pitched in 2 years and is still getting $21 million for the year. You better go out and spend the money for it. And there are gaping holes in this Mets team that need to be figured out. So you better be prepared to spend the money. You're now in year two of this team. It's time to really push the envelope here. And I get it. I was going to say, and I get it. You're building up your analytics department big time because there still is a formula for analytics. We've seen the Rays do it year in and year out. But you're going to have to go spend some money on some ball players.
Well, I think you absolutely hit it on the head with the two guys that they're going to be targeting. And I think they'd be crazy to not bring back Marcus Stroman, especially for a team that needs pitching after losing Syndergaard. Not that I think that Syndergaard was someone that you could count on. And quite frankly, I think it's crazy that the Angels spent so much on him as is. Like you mentioned, he pitched two innings last year, two innings the year before that. It's overpaying, and that's why Stroman's going to get paid. And I would be shocked if Marcus doesn't get a 5 to 6 year, $170, $190 million contract. He's going to get that because, again, look at everyone else that signed so far, pitching-wise. And Berrios, Jose Berrios, he signed, or I should say he got a contract extension. His was a big contract, but it's going to be nothing compared to Stroman. So I think he's going to be one huge target. And you nailed it on the head. I think Javier Baez is also going to get a huge contract. But like you also mentioned, when this lockout comes into effect, you know, how much is that going to affect it? And the other issue is that there aren't many big-time players that the Mets need out there when you look at it. I mean, this is a free agent shortstop class that I'm looking at with four or five different big-time shortstops. They already got there. They got there from Lindor. So they need pitching, and losing Syndergaard hurts if he does come back and use Syndergaard. But again, he has to throw the bag at Stroman, and I believe he'll throw the bag at Baez. But you got to spend. I'm sorry, there's no other way around it. You got to spend if you're going to talk like this, you're going to tweet like this. And actually, it's funny you mentioned that the media says, and I saw that quote, and then I saw another quote that I also thought was rather funny. where someone said, you know, what's one thing that you learned this past year? And he goes, being in first place for 120 some odd games or whatever it was is a lot better at the end of the season than the beginning of the season. It's like, yeah, dude, like, of course it is. That's why you don't talk, you know, don't talk a big game in April, May. Parades don't happen in April, May. They happen in late October, November. So it hopefully for Met fans' sake and for Steve Cohen, that this was a learning year and that you're learning, you know, how to operate a baseball team. And again, it begins with the GM, and you hope Billy Epler is able to, you know, right the ship, if you will, and see where things go. And, you know, the fact that he got a 4-year deal shows that there is some sort of, you know, long-term of a commitment to him. But again, the Mets just have a lot of holes to deal with just to kind of now compete with the defending champion Atlanta Braves.
Yep.
And, you know, the
Phillies. I mean, that's the other thing too.
Good.
That's the other thing too. That's a division rival that just won the World Series 88 games. Like, you should, there should be, there should be burning a fire under your ass to go out and be better than the Braves. Like, that's where you should be at this point. That's just like, again, it's just like if we would have saw the freaking Red Sox win the World Series. You would hope this Steinbrenner would be like, all right, let's go big game hunting, which is actually perfect now because obviously we're going to segue here on the Sports Talk 365 podcast as we'll continue to monitor the Mets situation, the New York Yankees. They seem to be big game hunting, but how real is it? For the last, I don't know, what are we in, 4 or 5 years now, Andrew? We've heard the Yankees wanting to get under the luxury tax threshold so it resets. So then they can go out and spend some money. They haven't done it yet. And their playoff exit in the wild card game went on to prove that this team is flawed and went on to prove they need to be the New York Yankees again. I don't care which way you look at it. The Dodgers have been in the World Series, what, 3 times in the last 4 or 5 years? And that's because they've gone out and spent the money to be in that position. They've gone out and made the big splash trades to get it done. Granted, they didn't win it this year, especially after going to get guys like Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, but they came pretty damn close again. When are the Yankees going to be the Yankees? We have now heard that they are linked to possibly looking at Carlos Correa or Corey Seager to fill a shortstop hole. Okay, great. We've heard them linked to a possible Matt Olson, who would be phenomenal for this team at Yankee Stadium now that the Oakland A's are doing a sell-off again. But then you hear, again, Hal Steinbrenner dance around a lot of things. And then you hear that the Yankees are not expected to break the bank for a shortstop, in which they desperately need. They let a shortstop go in Didi Gregorius, who was one of their better defenders, let him go. And granted, didn't have the best years the last 2 seasons with Philadelphia after being let go, but still decent. So what's the deal here with the Yankees? Because there were a lot of Yankee fans pissed off at the end of this season. Pissed off for the fact that Aaron Boone was coming back. They did revamp the coaching staff a little bit. They bring in Luis Rojas to be their third base coach, which should be interesting. And yes, that is the same Luis Rojas that was the manager of the New York Mets that was let go. So, do you think the Yankees are for real when we hear them being big game hunters, that people in the industry are thinking that?
This year, Joe, and I could be, you know, just a foolish person, but this year I think it is real. I think the fact that another first round exit, and here's why. Here's my reason behind it. Whether there's any, you know, true reasoning and whether the Yankees feel this way, that could be a different story. But my reasoning is this. Okay, Brian Cashman is under contract for this season. So this is essentially his, you know, not his last stand, but this is his last chance to kind of show, hey, I'm going to put a championship team together. If, again, I should also preface this is all dependent on the Yankees truly trying to win and not just be a good team that keeps fans coming into the ballpark. So that's what this hinges on. If Brian Cashman is able to put, Brian Cashman now has the fire under him to have to put together a championship winning team, because you haven't done it now in 11 years. You haven't been to the World Series in 11 years. So that's an even bigger problem in of itself. So Brian Cashman now, I think, is going to spend like a drunk sailor, kind of a la, you know, 2009 offseason, to get the team back to at least the World Series to show, hey, listen, you know, I'm still a good GM, and, you know, I'm not going to, you know, do the whole only right-handed hitters and lefties don't matter. No, that's all done. That's all bull. It showed that way by the trade deadline and everything. The fact that they had to go out to acquire two lefty big-time players in Gallo and Rizzo just shows you that, oh, shit, I messed up. I can't do it, you know, by the numbers or by whatever my analytical guys tell me. I have to do things a certain way. So I think that's number one. Number two, bringing back Boone, again, it was going to happen because if the Yankees, God forbid, are absolutely terrible this year, which, hey, listen, there's a chance they are terrible if they don't go spending and acquire guys. They were not going to hire a new manager only to essentially fire him and Brian Cashman, at the end of the year if the Yankees are terrible. Because, again, if the Yankees finish poorly and they finish, you know, at 500 or below 500, there is 0% chance you could bring back Brian Cashman. So at that point, you'd be firing another manager, and then you'd bring in a whole new, you know, general manager and a manager of the team. It wasn't going to happen. So bringing back Boone wasn't shocking. So with all that said, those are my reasonings for why Cashman's going to spend big. I think they're going to go after a big-time shortstop. I don't think it's going to be Carlos Correa. I think he's going to inevitably wind up with the Tigers, unless the Astros come out of nowhere and make a big-time push, which I don't think they will. But I think Corey Seager is the guy that they should be targeting. Corey Seager is going to be the guy because of the fact that you can play him at shortstop for a couple of years, and then if Anthony Volpe is the guy that we're hearing is that he's going to be, he'll go to shortstop and then slide Bellinger over to third base. Bellinger has that swing made for Yankee Stadium, so I think, A, that's going to be one big play. They are going to pick up a shortstop. I have no doubt. It has to happen. You cannot go into the season, you know, doing the whole dance of who's playing shortstop and Gleyber at second, and something's going to happen. So I think that will be one big thing. And then obviously they need starting pitching. Goes without saying, you need someone. You cannot rely on the five guys and the six guys you have now. We saw that this year. The openers and the Michael Kings and the Clark Smith, it didn't work last year. Granted, the pitching wasn't awful last year, but it didn't work. You can't do that because then you blow out the bullpen, which, hey, guess what happened towards the down stretch? The bullpen was blowing games. So all those reasons are why I think they're going to go after a big pitcher. But like I mentioned with the Mets, there aren't too many big pitchers out there. So now what does Cashman do? Does he get creative, make a trade? Today is the deadline for the Rule 5 draft, so I'm sure we'll see a couple, you know, roster spaces open up, and maybe they'll do something like they did with Taillon last year, where you trade a couple guys away and clear up some space, and you bring in someone else's big-time pitcher, you know, that's not a contract that they're looking to move. But again, this is where Brian Cashman has to get creative, and I think they have to spend in the ways that they're able to, and they have to spend like the New York Yankees, unless they're just trying to get by and fill the stadium. So, again, we'll see this year whether the Yankees are serious about being a true World Series contender or just trying to be good for 162 and rolling the dice in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they got to do something. And you're right in a sense, because you go back to when you first started that statement where they haven't won a World Series since 2009. And they were one game away a few years ago from the World Series with a team that probably was on the cusp as it was, and then they took significant steps backwards. And again, this year, significant steps backwards. You know, granted, your best player was hurt down the stretch in Gerrit Cole, and, you know, we saw what happened in the wild card game, but the Yankees have to make these moves. There's no which way around it. And again, we go back to the old adage of if the boss was around, things would be totally different. I mean, how many times can we really say it? Listen, I believe in it too. I mean, listen, Andrew, both you and I can agree with the fact that, oh boy, if George Steinbrenner was around, heads would roll and this would not be the case.
But that's the thing though, Joe. When the boss was around, the emphasis was on winning. It was on winning a championship. And I'm sorry, it's not anymore. Or at least it's apparent to us that it's not anymore. It's like I said, it feels like they're more so concerned with filling the stadium for 162 than ultimately winning the championship. And I mm-hmm. dare anyone to say differently. That's why you're completely correct. If the boss was here, I think that you could find a way to do both. But I'm sorry, we haven't seen that with Hal since 2009.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why there's a lot of pressure, I feel, on Brian Cashman. And I believe Cashman is in his final year of his contract with the Yankees.
He is, yeah.
So it's certainly going to be something to watch. It's definitely going to be something that, you know, everybody's going to want to see. And we were kind of talking about this. You know, it's so funny. You're the one that texted me earlier today, like, hey, maybe we should wait to record this until that 5 o'clock deadline. Because the Rule 5, I think, is going on. Was it Rule 5?
Yeah, that's going on? The Rule 5 deadline to have guys off your 40-man roster.
Am I out of the, which is good, would be totally surprising for me, but this was the GM meetings, not the winter meetings, correct?
Just the GM meetings, right.
Usually, I thought the Rule 5 happens after the winter meetings conclude, like on the last day of the winter meetings. Never really happens at the GM meetings.
It does. Today's the deadline to have you.
Oh, your roster submitted.
40-man roster.
True.
Exactly.
That's right. So that's the other thing, is that we were kind of sitting there thinking, oh, well, will there be a big significant move? Because the Yankees might have to move a player or two to free up that roster space to protect for Rule 5. So it's definitely going to be interesting. Nothing has happened significantly today, and we don't anticipate much to happen significantly. But then again, just when you think, and that's the one thing you got to give it, we could be so pissed off at Brian Cashman at the lack of doing something, and then at the drop of a hat, we could get some sort of big breaking news thing that comes across, you know, social media or media platforms. So, but again, another situation that we'll have to obviously monitor and see. But obviously for the Yankees and Mets, I think this is the most important offseason for both of these teams for different reasons. And so, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. And of course, it all of this ties in with the fact if there will be a labor stoppage. Now, quickly, there is a decent class that's out there, Andrew. We mentioned some of the names throughout this podcast so far. Freddie Freeman is a name that's out there, and I know that some of the reports was that the Braves had offered him 5 years. He rejected it. He has spoken to other teams. The Yankees were one team that checked in with his representatives. But the overall feeling, I think, for him is he would probably, he's one of those guys that I, unless it's really bad and there's a deep disconnect between Freeman and the ownership with the Atlanta Braves, I don't see him playing in another uniform. Then you have Carlos Correa and Corey Seager, as we mentioned, two of the bigger free agent shortstops that are out there. Correa had breakfast in Detroit or in Houston the other morning with his former manager, A.J. Hinch, who's now the current manager of Detroit. Detroit's looking to spend some money and put some ball players on this team now that they're ready to take the next step. You know, so some of these big-time free agents that are out there, what are your thoughts? And let's just, I guess, focus on these guys, you know, the Freddie Freemans and the Carlos Correa and Corey Seagers. Ultimately, what's your thought process on these guys?
I mean, look, I love Freddie Freeman. He would be someone that, you know, if he was a couple years younger, I could see getting like a 10-year stupid deal like that. I think he's that good of a player. He's that good of a clubhouse guy. But yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if he winds up anywhere but Atlanta. I think this is all just posturing, and you know, granted, he put up an Instagram, you know, thanking the Braves community, and people started to get worried about that. But it's one of those inevitable things that, like you said, unless talks break down or something gets ugly, or you know, someone else comes in and throws a big bag his way, I'd be shocked to see him anywhere else next year. The shortstop situation is interesting. It really is. Like I mentioned, I think Correa will wind up with the Tigers just because of the fact you have the A.J. Hinch connection. I think if Correa was smart, you try to rid yourself of the Astros and not necessarily give yourself a new identity, but just to kind of at least step away from the organization where you're known as a cheater. And granted, he'll still be known as a cheater. Look at someone like George Springer. And I think that that's the route you go. You try to get away from that. You don't want to, you know, especially if you do have a Hall of Fame career, you don't want to be synonymous with a team that you were in the biggest scandal in baseball that we've seen since the steroid era. So I think that he'll wind up there. Seager is someone that, again, I mentioned, I think he has to be the target for the Yankees, but you also have to worry about the Dodgers. And the Dodgers do have the willingness to spend money. Again, like you mentioned, they gave Andrew Heaney over $5 million, I think it was, or something like that.
Eight million.
$8 million. Right. The same Andrew Heaney who would give up a home run during every appearance with the Yankees. So you know the Dodgers will spend like drunk sailors. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. I know Trevor Story turned down his qualifying offer, so he's looking for a deal. I think he could be the kind of person that maybe will sign a big one-year deal, try to, you know, do a prove-it contract kind of thing. So maybe that's where it could work out for the Yankees, where if you think Volpe or Peraza is super close, maybe you do go after Trevor Story and do a one-year deal or a one-year deal with a player option, something like that, if you don't want to go on a super long-term basis. So that could happen. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens also in the catching market, because a lot of teams are looking for catchers. And we didn't mention that with the Yankees at all, but especially with everything with Gary Sanchez and what has gone on over the past few years, I'm very curious to see what they do with him. Do you bring back Gary Sanchez? Do you try to, you know, make it work? And, you know, granted, he hit a little bit better, but the catching definitely, or his defense definitely wasn't as good. But again, when you look at the free agents, there isn't a lot out there. So I that's the one position that a lot of teams are going to try to, you know, get better at. But I don't know who's out there. I mean, there's no one really out there. So that's the big thing in my mind. And then also it's going to be the pitching market. The pitching market, I don't know what's going to go on. And again, Andrew Heaney getting over $8 million, Syndergaard getting over, you know, over $20 million. It's all going to be set by Marcus Stroman. I think Marcus Stroman is the best pitcher out there right now in terms of, you know, his age and what he's done. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw is a free agent, but I would be shocked if he's going anywhere else but the Dodgers. You know, maybe Texas makes a bid for him to bring him home to his home state. But in terms of all the big name stuff, I'd be, you know, there aren't really a lot of big guys out there. And then, again, like you mentioned, it's all going to depend on the labor shortage or stoppage and how many guys are going to try to get a deal before the December 1st window where everything has a possibility of shutting down. So I think we'll probably get a flurry of moves in the next couple of weeks. So I'm sure we'll have another podcast to discuss
you know,
who is doing what. So,
yeah. So, you know, a lot of things going on. And of course, it's so funny. We can talk about this, but it all comes down to the potential labor strike that could happen. So many things that we were able to get to, but the one thing I do want to end the podcast on here is just to throw out condolences, because we've had two former big leaguers pass away in the last couple of weeks at unexpectedly young ages, and one of them was a former Met pitcher, Pedro Feliciano, who also spent some time with the New York Yankees, mid-40s, and it seemed like right now the report that we got was a heart attack. And then also former Red Sox Jorge Julio.
Julio Lugo.
So two names that, you know, are not, they're not big, big names, but you kind of knew them in the game of baseball. So obviously thoughts and prayers are with their families, and just very sad to see when anybody dies, really, but at young ages like that. So crazy, crazy stuff, though. And obviously we'll be on top of it all when and if we know if there will be a labor stoppage. Again, December 1st is the deadline. That's when the CBA expires, right before the winter meetings. It's definitely going to be interesting. But as always, Andrew Hartz, my man, thank you so much for joining us here on the Sports Talk 365 podcast. It's always good talking baseball with you, bud.
Joe, likewise, bud. Can't wait to do it again.
You've been listening to the Sports Talk 365 podcast. On behalf of Andrew Hartz, I'm Joe Sakoa. We'll see you next time.